Every team, every topic, everywhere. This is Believe.
Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong.
Claudia Fleming is my guest on this week's Hot Takes on a Plate on the Believe Podcast Network. If there was a Hall of Fame for chefs, she'd be in on the first ballot. She is one of the most influential and revered American pastry chefs there has ever been. She is a James Beard Award winner from her days at Gramercy Tavern. And of course, she has an iconic cookbook, The Last Course, that was reissued this past fall to much fanfare. And if this was a normal summer, you would find her at the North Fork Table and Inn in Southold, making amazing desserts for the guests in the dining room and whipping up tremendous pastries for the people staying at the inn when they wake up in the morning. And if you were like me, you might even have found her, as I found her a couple years ago, working on the food truck behind the North Fork Table and Inn, rolling up her sleeves in the summer heat, serving people lunch. And I bring that up, Claudia, because one, I think people sometimes get it confused just because you're a James Beard Award winner and all of that. You're also a small business owner and you got to do all that stuff. But this is not a normal summer for more than just a global pandemic. It's not a normal summer for you because you sold the North Fork Table and Inn. So what are you up to?
Well, thankfully, I got a book contract. So I'm working on another book.
Nice.
So I'm busy with that. Thankfully, probably not as busy as I should be. I've been taking considerable amount of time off to enjoy the summer for the first time in 20 years. But you know, there's lots of planning and thinking and, you know, consulting with my co-author. And on a day like today, I'm not turning the oven on. So, it's keeping my mind occupied and giving me something to do rather than working at the restaurant and on the food truck and, you know, doing breakfast and such, which I miss terribly.
So you miss it, but I'm wondering, it's such a weird, you know, time to sort of retire from having a restaurant, because on one hand, you know, you're missing out on, in a good way, having to deal with COVID as a restaurant owner, because I can only imagine the stress and just the agony of trying to put anything in place to keep people safe and to keep yourself safe and keep your staff safe. On the other hand, this is like the worst summer to be free because there's not a whole lot to do.
I'm doing okay. I'm in a beautiful place. I'm thankful for that. You know, doing considerable amounts of thinking and considering about life and future, doing some paddleboarding and kayaking and running and just trying to take it easy and figure out what the next chapter is. But my heart breaks for all my friends and colleagues who are having to deal with this awful pandemic and this terrible time.
I mean, if I were owning a restaurant right now, my stomach would be in a knot going to work every day.
I only envision myself like in the fetal position in a corner. Like I just can't imagine how people are doing it and motivating themselves to keep going.
As somebody as wise as you are, do you have any advice for anybody listening who maybe owns a restaurant or is working in a kitchen right now?
I wish I did. I'm sure I'm sad in that I'm grateful that I'm not having to, you know, deal with all of the challenges. And on the other hand, I feel that I'm not contributing to moving the industry forward because, you know, necessity is the mother of invention, and everyone is just working so hard to reimagine and recreate what the restaurant industry is going to look like. And not being in it, I don't have that motivation, I'm afraid. My heart goes out to everybody. But
is it almost like survivor's guilt?
Perhaps. That's a very interesting point. Yeah. I do feel very guilty not having to, you know, kind of get in there and reimagine what the future is going to look like. But plenty of people smarter than me will, in no doubt, figure it out.
Well, Well, let's move on to something fun, Claudia. We all need something fun right now. So first off, before we get to the fun, if you're a new listener to Hot Takes on a Plate here on the Believe Podcast Network, make sure to subscribe if you're on Apple Podcasts. If you're on Spotify, follow. That way you'll get a new episode every week, just sort of dropped in your listening app of choice. And make sure to rate us 5 stars, of course. And here on Hot Takes on a Plate, you, the listener, get to eavesdrop on the ultimate food fights as I debate my culinary world friends and other eating enthusiasts in their areas of expertise. And of course, Claudia, your area of expertise is the sweet finish, the last course, dessert. So I'm going to throw some hot takes your way about dessert, and you tell me if I'm right, tell me if I'm wrong, and why. You ready?
Okay. Yeah.
All right. First one, big time hot take here.
Okay.
On its own, milk chocolate is better than dark chocolate on its own. Now, listen, I think dark chocolate is great when it's mixed in something. I think dark chocolate is better in chocolate chip cookies. It's better in ice cream. It's better on a pretzel. But on its own, dark chocolate, it's too one note. I want the milk chocolate because, gasp, I know. The milk chocolate, though, you get the sweetness. You get the creaminess on its own. It, to me, I know people think of it as garbage, but I think in the food world, I think of it as a superior product. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You're wrong. I mean, look, everything comes down to a matter of preference, right? And if that's your preference, then it's better for you. But I find it to be too sweet generally. And, you know, dark chocolate is like coffee and wine. The notes and the complexities of it, I think, are far greater than the complexities of milk chocolate, because the addition of the milk or the cream and the sugar tend to mute those more interesting notes of dark chocolate.
Now, I'm going to contradict myself because I agree with you. With coffee, like I drink my coffee black for that reason. But it also took me an adjustment period. I started off as a milk and sugar person, and then I cut the sugar, and then I cut the milk. And I think I'm going to argue that dark chocolate is probably kind of the same way. Like if you're using like the really high end stuff, there's like that adjustment period to it. You almost have to train your palate because, hey, look, to me, milk chocolate is childhood memories. It's nostalgia, and no part of a meal is more nostalgic to me than dessert. I mean, that's just, dessert just brings me back to childhood. And the reason why I say on its own milk chocolate is because dark chocolate, when say added to like ice cream, like mint chocolate chip, it's like the dark chocolate works well because you have the sweet ice cream to play off of it. You know, you have another note to it. Whereas to me, on its own, it's just, it's a little too bitter. I want a little bit more sweetness. It's dessert. That's where I'm coming from.
All right. I'm going to just chalk that up to personal preference.
Claudia has disowned me. This is over. Good night, everyone.
I mean, there are times when, you know, milk chocolate, it's easy, right? You don't have to think about it. You can just kind of eat it. But I guess in my world, I don't know. I'm so careful about what I eat that I am very considerate about everything I eat. And so I like the multifaceted, multi-layered, leveled nuances of dark chocolate over milk chocolate. Unless it's Easter and there's a milk chocolate bunny.
There we go. Childhood memories.
Yeah. Yeah. I do love a milk chocolate bunny.
All right. Well, I think this next one we're going to agree on, but I could be wrong. There's an now, okay, so the next one, there's an age-old debate. What's the better part of the cake? Is it the cake itself or the frosting? And I think this is no debate. It's the cake. It's the cake. It's the cake. It's the cake. The frosting is too one note. It's just sugar. A cake can be sweet, but it can also be buttery. It can be salty. You've got that great texture. I mean, to me, it's not even close. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You are 100% right.
Thank you.
And coming from a person who is not a layer cake lover, and perhaps because of that icing situation, I don't like icing. For me, it's all about the cake. because as you said, cakes can be so many different things. They can be, you know, denser and chewier or lighter and fluffier and, you know, have nuts or not, and or cornmeal or not, and just all kinds of wonderful flavorings.
Whereas your dog agrees too. Your dog agrees.
My dog agrees. Let's see if we can get her.
It's
to
fine.
Shut
it's
up.
It's a podcast. Nobody cares. Nobody cares if a dog's barking, Claudia.
Neighbor's dog came out, so she's.
It's all good. It's all look. It's summer. It's hot out. You know, we got to let out some steam.
It's hot.
It is really hot. It is disgusting hot. And, you know, but talking about cake and frosting, you know, frosting, icing, it that's a condiment, you know, that's like saying like, what's better, a burger or ketchup and mayo. Like, yeah. of course the burger is better. Like, I don't understand this idea of listing the condiment as better than the main course.
Agreed. I'm with you 100%. We're good on this one.
Good. All right. Next one. Another age-old debate, brownies. There's two types, cakey and fudgy. And to me, okay, there's no debate. Fudgy is the only way to go with a brownie.
Otherwise have a chocolate cake. Otherwise have chocolate cake.
Exactly. I mean, a cakey brownie is just a chocolate chip muffin. That's all it is. That's not a brownie. Get that garbage out of here.
Yeah, no, I'm not into cakey brownies at all. Dense and fudgy but I don't like them wet.
Okay.
I like them dense and chewy, but not undercooked.
So kind of like a good chocolate chip cookie, because people always say, do you like your chocolate chip cookie crunchy or do you want it chewy and moist? And to me, it's like, no, I want it kind of like soft in the center, but I want like crisp edges.
Edges, crunchy.
There you go. Crunchy. All right. We don't even need to discuss that one anymore. Next one. Cheesecake is not a cake. It's not a cake. It's a pie.
Or it's a custard.
You could say the filling is a custard, but if we're labeling the whole thing, I would say it's a pie. I mean, it has basically a pie crust. I think the texture... Well, in that case, then, if you're saying it's a custard, wouldn't key lime pie be a custard?
Yeah, it is a custard.
A filling, but it's still a pie, right? No?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think...
You just threw a curveball at me, Claudia. I wasn't ready for custard.
Well, I mean, it's juice, it's eggs, it's butter, it's a custard.
I think you might have a point.
It's technically a custard.
Crap, I wasn't ready for that. I'm swimming out of my depths here. I wasn't ready for that.
All right.
I can't argue with that.
Should we take it back? Should we reel it back?
No. I just blew my mind there with custard. I was like, okay. I thought I had something there with pie because, I mean, you know, you have often graham cracker crust that is a pie crust. There's no actual cake, but you're right. But I guess custard is a filling in pies, isn't it? Often?
Yes, it is.
So then it is a pie.
But I think of a pie as like blueberry pie, or I think of crust and fruit filling as a pie.
But, you know, but again, key lime pie. So your argument is key lime pie is not a pie. Lemon meringue pie.
I'm saying the filling is a custard, I guess. Okay. I guess pie is just referring to the shape, right? Maybe?
Yeah, I'm thinking that to me, like a pie needs like some kind of crust, you know, some kind of, whether it's baked or it's graham cracker or whatever. So that's why I think I'm going cheesecake. They call it cake in the name, but it's not a cake.
Yeah, that is a little interesting. Maybe it's just because of the shape.
Yeah. It's a phony. It's a fugazi. It's trying to fake its way into being a cake. Come on. Or we know it's okay. You're a cheese pie.
It's not a cake. Well, wait. Yeah, no, it's not a cake.
All right. We kind of agree on that one. All right, next one.
Disc. It's a cheese disc. That sounds appetizing.
Then it becomes a pizza. It's a pizza. Cheesecake is a pizza. Okay. Next one. This one I'm very proud of. So please don't hurt me too much on this one if you disagree. I put a lot of thought into this. The best pastry to have with coffee in the morning. And when I say coffee, I'm talking black coffee here, people. Is anything lemon. Lemon pound cake, lemon bread, lemon poppy loaf, whatever. Anything lemon, when you combine the sweetness with the acidity. It plays so well with coffee. It just hits you. It actually brings out the sweet notes in a coffee and kind of mellows it out, because it's kind of like wine. Like if you're eating something acidic and you pair it with an acidic wine, it's going to mellow it. So yes, it's going to take some of that acid out of it. And if you do that, if you have a lemon something with black coffee, you will see it'll change your life forever. Tell me I'm right. Tell me I'm wrong.
You know what? I'm going to say you're right only because I am not familiar with that. I tend to not eat anything with my coffee. If I do, it's usually toast.
Okay.
I don't do sweet generally in the morning, but you know, theoretically it makes great sense. And I'm going to check it out tomorrow.
Yes, do it. Do it and write back to me, because it is just like, it's a revelation, especially if it's a good lemon, whatever. And if you're making it yourself, it's going to be really good. So get ready to have your mind blown.
All right. What do you think of like lemon custard on toast? Like lemon curd on toast?
That sounds pretty good.
Pound cake?
That sounds pretty good.
Okay, good.
That sounds pretty good. Yeah, I mean, I like putting like fruit on toast, you know? Like I'll tell you, one of my favorite things that I just do so much, especially this time of year, is I like taking peaches, nectarines, plums, and putting pesto on them on toast.
Oh, yum.
Yeah. Yeah, great pesto idea. On stone fruits, so good.
Yum.
So
with
good.
Or without the fruit, without the cheese. Pesto with cheese in it?
You can do cheese, but I have been on a vegan pesto kick lately,
okay.
Just because I'm watching the cholesterol and all that stuff.
Yep.
And if you don't feel like, look, I'm not getting any advertising dollars from them. This is just my opinion. But if you're feeling lazy and don't feel like making your own pesto, Gotham Greens does a great vegan pesto. Fantastic.
Cool.
Okay. We're going to play a game now. It's a little different than it's hot takes, but this is something new here. I'm going to call it Final Four.
Okay.
So I'm going to throw what I think are the four best of something in a certain category. And you tell me why I'm right, wrong, and what your four best are.
Okay.
Okay. Ready? Here we go. We're going to start with fruit. Fruit, of course, is a dessert. I mean, it's a great thing to finish. It's nature's dessert. And to me, the final four fruits, the Mount Rushmore fruits, plums is going on there. Plums, because to me, plums are like the chefiest of the basic fruits. You have that just super sugary sweet center, but then that skin that gives you the tartness and the bitterness, it's so well-rounded. Cherries, just like, again, sweet and tart, but there's a depth to it. There's just this intensity to it. It's just like a better, stronger version of other fruits that play with those flavors. Cherries. Watermelon. Watermelon to me is like the cotton candy of the fruit world, because it the way it's fibrous and it sort of disintegrates in your mouth like cotton candy, and it's sweet and it's just so juicy. Good watermelon is hard to top. And of course the last one, blackberries. I just love the texture of blackberries, that little crunch. They're great in yogurt. They're great on anything. So I'm going plums, cherries, watermelon, blackberries.
Okay.
What is your final four? How does it stack up?
Okay. Well, I don't know that we have any in common. Mine are figs.
Oh, okay.
Black raspberries. Pears. I got to go with pears.
Really?
Yeah. Nothing like a juicy, ripe pear. Oh,
wow.
And then poached pears are amazing. Raw or cooked pears, I think, are amazing. So what do we have? We have black raspberries, figs, pears, and peaches.
Now, peaches I can get down with. Peaches just missed the cut. Just missed the cut. I actually prefer nectarines to peaches. I like that floral sort of note they give off. Like my favorite wines sort of have that nectariney kind of thing going on for it. Pears. Wow. I would not have gone pears. I mean, they're good in salads, but I don't get excited for pears.
I love pears.
Figs are good. Figs are one of those things that are great in like if you're putting out an appetizer, like you want to talk about things on toast, figs on toast with a little fresh mozzarella. Yes. Ricotta. Oh,
honey. Yeah.
So good. And then you throw out black raspberries. That's very, almost esoteric. Like, it's not like something.
Well, they're hard to come by.
Yeah.
But luckily we have them around here for a very brief amount of time, but they're like a little spoon of jam. Like, they are so jammy and intense and delicious. I'm working on a black raspberry chocolate semifreddo, which is just yum, yum, yum. It's so good.
Also one of the best ice cream flavors you can find.
Yes. Yes.
With chocolate
chips in it. Yes.
Yes, absolutely. Now, I saw you make a face. We're doing this via social distancing technology. I saw you make a face when I said watermelon.
I'm shocked. I love watermelon. I could eat watermelon all day long. But I don't think, I guess, you know, as somebody who works with fruit to almost always transform it into something else, watermelon does not, you know, it's hard to work with.
Well, I will say watermelon ice is fantastic.
True,
watermelon ice is fantastic.
True.
But I will say that is exactly why watermelon is great, because why would you want to transform it? It's perfect on its own. People grill it now and that's fine, but it's also good with savory things, you know, a little feta cheese, some onions, some herbs, and you make yourself an amazing salad.
Yeah. Have you ever put chili salt on it? And lime?
I have not done that. Although I've done that with, I have had that done with mangoes.
Yeah. Same with watermelon. It's outrageously delicious.
Talking about fruit with you makes a lot of sense, because it's in your wheelhouse. It's what you've done with your desserts. You know, you've treated desserts like a chef would, and you incorporate fresh produce into so much of what you've done over your career.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, you'd be hard-pressed for me. Actually, picking four is very difficult. I don't know that I've ever met a fruit I don't love. So that was a very challenge. That was challenging.
Well, the next one's going to be challenging, too, because the next final four also plays into your philosophy as a pastry chef, which is that for all the success you've had and all the acclaim, you like your desserts to be accessible. You don't want them to be fussy. You want them to be accessible. And there's nothing more accessible than candy bars. So we're going to do a final four of candy bars. Now, I left off of my list the harder to find obscure candy bars. I went very mainstream just so people have a reference point. They know what I'm talking about. My final four, and there's you'll see there's sort of a theme, I think, with it. But here it is in no particular order. One, you have to have Twix.
Yes.
You have to have Twix. You got to have that crunch of the cookie with the caramel and the chocolate. It's perfect.
The shortbread.
You got to have in there Kit Kat. Kit Kat, again, the same, just similar reasons, that crunch. And it's just that perfect balance of the chocolate to wafer ratio. You also got to have in there the Reese's peanut butter cup. And the irony is, I'm not a huge peanut butter in dessert person in general, but the peanut butter that they use in the Reese's peanut butter cups just is like, it's addictive. It's so good. And the last one, first of all, I will say those other three are way up there. This one's a little bit behind. Nestle Crunch, because again, I just love that texture of having the Rice Krispie in there. It's
you
so
like
good.
The crunch.
I do. So Twix, Kit Kat, Reese's peanut butter cup, Nestle Crunch. What do you got, Claudia?
I'm Twix and Kit Kat. Absolutely. I'm on board. Snickers. I'm going to have to add Snickers.
Always a solid choice.
Yes. Right. And remember the $1 million bars? They were kind of like Nestle's Crunch, but they also had caramel.
Oh, like $100,000.
Yeah. Is that what they're called?
They have the ones now, $100,000, that are, it's basically a Nestle Crunch with caramel. And I thought about that, but I feel like in the case of the $100,000, the caramel distracts from the crunch. It's almost like a little too much the way it's the ratios. They don't have the ratios right.
Maybe you can consult with them.
There you go. Hey, Nestle, how's it going?
But I think we are both on board with the crispy, crunchy, caramely chocolate thing.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
And you've been inspired by candy bars throughout your career.
The Rolo was a big inspiration for me for the chocolate caramel tart, for sure. Even though it's a lot like a Twix, you know, Twix is milk chocolate and the Rolo is dark chocolate. So that it kind of had more the intensity of a Rolo. and less of a Twixt. But yeah, I love candy bars.
You know, it's funny, you brought up Easter before. What are your thoughts on the Cadbury egg?
Yeah. I don't like it. It's too sweet.
Yeah.
Too sweet.
Yeah. I think they make ones now that have, maybe it's not them. It's like you can get eggs that are like Snickers bars and other things. That I'm down with.
And Reese's peanut butter cups too.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yeah.
Good stuff. Well, Claudia, thank you so much for the time. Please enjoy your summer. Enjoy the time off. If anyone has earned it, it's you. I can't wait to see the books you have coming out. Thank you so much. And if you are listening to Hot Takes on a Plate here on the Believe Podcast Network for the first time, make sure to follow, subscribe, rate us 5 stars. Of course, Hot Takes on a Plate is part of the Believe Podcast Network, the number one podcast network for professionals. Check them out at BLEAV.com. That's Believe.com. And until next time, I'm Rob Petrone. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to Believe. You can show support to your host by subscribing to the show and giving us a 5-star rating on your preferred platform. Check us out at Believe.com and search for BLEAV on YouTube.